I'm Richard van den Berg.
I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central episode 105 for the weekend starting Friday 18 July 2014.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism. Look for us on Twitter at Tech Central.
On Google Plus at Plus Tech Central.
And on Facebook at Tech Central ZA.
On Talk Central this week, we talk about the explosion in the number of mobile payment apps, as well as the Tech Central team's plans to go cashless for a month.
And I chat about the latest developments around the Department of Telecoms and Postal Services.
As always, we pick the week's biggest winner and biggest loser, and Duncan and I will pick our product or app of the week.
That's right, but first we need to pay the bills. We'll be back in just a moment.
Tired of no internet connection, no line availability, no signal? Then say yeah. Say yeah to cutting-edge technology. Say yeah to satellite internet access. Say yeah to high speed. Say yeah to always on. Say yeah to reliable. Say yeah to affordable. Say yeah to quick installation. Say yeah to YaClick satellite internet access. And you could be saying yeah to free hardware and installation. YaClick, available from Vox Telecom and Atlantic. SMS your name to 484884 and we'll call you right back. Standard rates apply.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Good, thanks. So you've been running around town over the last week or two talking to a lot of mobile payments guys. I've chatted to one of them myself, actually.
Mm.
And a lot of development happening in that space at the moment. It seems like it's the new thing to be in tech.
Yes, definitely.
Mobile payments. And there's actually some pretty cool stuff. I like the tech, and I haven't really had a chance to use a lot of it yet because it hasn't really been deployed to any real extent across the retail chain in South Africa.
Yeah.
But let's go through them. Let's talk a bit about some of these apps. Maybe we should start with the one briefly that we mentioned in the show last week. Zappa, the guys from Durban.
Yeah. Look, it's really a great space with mobile payments now. I think the industry is kind of sitting up and taking note of it. I think that, let me just start with saying this. The funny thing is, a lot of these guys have been in development for about 2 years. So when they started out, I'm sure they thought that they would have an edge on the market before anybody else would launch. And that's at least what some of the guys have been telling me. But yeah, Zappa is one of the ones we looked at last week. It's a mobile payment app. You load your credit cards into it. And then you can go to a number of merchants to actually pay for your services without actually handing over your card. What I liked about Zappa in particular was they seem to have a good hold on some of the restaurant chains, in that they've set up some really interesting profiles with some of these guys. There's some big companies that they said they were going to be approaching for some of the big restaurant chains. And to me, that is probably the key to getting into the market. Once you have that weight behind you, you know, if you have the likes of a Spur or Nando's or Wimpy in South Africa, I think that's where you'll get the entry into, or get the critical mass that you may need. Then obviously we're also looking at a few others. MasterPass is another recent one that launched.
I've installed that one on my phone. That one looks quite good. That's launched by MasterCard in partnership with Standard Bank.
Yes.
That was launched just this week.
Yes.
Tell us a bit more about how that one works.
So MasterPass is slightly different to the others in that it's got a big hold on the online payment thing, the online payments basically. So when you go to a merchant like takealot.com, you'll be able to, at checkout, verify or pay for your purchase using the MasterPass app. It's got an authentication built in. So when you go to checkout, you'll have a QR code that you scan from your device, and that'll authenticate the payment.
On your PC. This is mainly for online shopping. So.
Yes, that is for online shopping. Although they also said that you will be able to buy physical goods in real stores with it,
okay,
which will also use a QR code to scan.
Okay.
And perhaps now it's time to also just talk about the QR side of it, because all of these applications has QR codes or QR tags as the base of their authentication, just to verify that you are either the person that you are paying or that the amount that you want to pay is verified with the merchant.
Mm.
So, MasterPass, I haven't played with it myself. I see you got it installed, yeah?
I've got it installed. I've added my FNB Platinum check and credit cards. And I haven't actually used it yet. But the reason I was willing to sign up for it is that although it's got Standard Bank logos all over it, it you don't have to be a Standard Bank customer to use it.
Yes.
Which is pretty cool. And I don't know, some of these apps I'm a little concerned about giving my credit card details to, especially if they're not affiliated with a bank. I trust I trust Standard Bank. I don't bank with them, but I trust them to keep my money safe. So seeing the Standard Bank logo on here, I think has given me some confidence to put in my banking details into these devices and then to use them for payment. I think I may be a little more reluctant to use something like a FlickPay, for example, which I stand to correction. You went to the launch, but as I understand it, it doesn't have a bank brand.
It doesn't have a bank
associated with it.
But all of these guys, they do have a payment merchant in the back end, whether it's somebody like PayU or PayGate. And those guys are obviously verified and trusted providers. So, yes, while I see a concern with potentially signing up with an app that's not endorsed by a bank or a Visa or a MasterCard, I think in today's day and age, it's easy to trust something that's been verified by the likes of a PayGate or a PayU. Simply because you know you've got a trusted merchant at the back. And also your credit card details aren't, okay, this is what they say, but your credit card details aren't stored on any servers. It's only on your device, encrypted. The information leaves your device encrypted.
But do we know that that encryption that they're using on these devices to store the credit card detail on your phone is all that secure? Or do we just have to trust them and say, well, they tell you that it's a strong encryption technology that they're using, and therefore it's okay. I don't know. I think consumers perhaps should be a little bit reluctant before they rush out and use every single app that comes along. But certainly, I think, I mean, that's not to detract from any of the five we're going to talk about today. But I think the five we're going to talk about today, I know they're all legitimate, but you know, as this takes off and as this becomes the flavor of the month, there's going to be dozens of these things available in the Play Store, in other marketplaces. Yes. So I think one probably has to exercise a little bit of sense when firing these things up. But there's also SnapScan, right? And that's also associated with Standard Bank. It's actually been launched by Standard Bank. Also works with all banks, and I've provided my details to that as well. But I must admit, I haven't used these products in any sort of real detail yet, but certainly it looks like there's quite a bit of overlap between SnapScan and MasterPass.
Yeah, there is. MasterPass obviously is a MasterCard initiative, where SnapScan is a Standard Bank, Standard Bank first initiative. When I was speaking to the guys from MasterCard, I obviously couldn't give much comment on differentiating between the two, because as they said, they were also not too affair with all of the apps in their stable. But so what we're talking about, SnapScan. To me, what differentiates most of these things is obviously you've got the QR tag. You're either going to scan the tag to pay somebody, or the QR tag that you scan is going to have the payment information in it. With something like SnapScan, I have to enter the amount that I want to pay somebody. So that obviously is a good and a bad thing, I guess. So it's a good thing because I can set the limits. But the bad thing is it takes a little bit longer for me to then make that payment. Where something like Zappa or FlickPay, the QR code actually embeds the amount that needs to be paid. So you literally just scan or approve the payment. And what's nice about FlickPay, it's got an optional setting that you can actually enable to verify that this is the amount that you want to pay. If you disable that, it'll just send the money through.
Okay, cool. So FlickPay, who's behind FlickPay? Is that just a startup?
That's just a startup.
Okay. And they're working with the VDE cafes and others. You get a free coffee when you sign up.
Yeah, FlickPay, that was I think it's also a good initiative to partner with somebody like a VDE cafe, because it's a good coffee shop. They've got a very good footprint, especially in the capital market, which is good for international tourists, I think, if they're coming here and they want to be a little bit more safe with their card payments. FlickPay, out of the ones that I've used, which is I've used Zappa, FlickPay, and SnapScan, I must say FlickPay is one of the nicer looking applications.
Okay.
But Zappa seems to be the one with the weight behind it, I think.
SnapScan, of course, and MasterPass as well, because I mean that's got Standard Bank behind both of those.
For sure. But the uptake in terms of the merchants that would be using them.
Zappa does seem to have a slight edge, especially in the restaurant market right now.
I wonder though if it would be possible to get to a point where the QR code is standard across any platform that you want to pay, and the applications is able to interpret that accordingly. Because let's be honest, you don't want to have five apps on your phone. Do then pick, I mean, I guess you can, but do then pick which one you want to pay with, whichever the merchant accepts.
Yeah.
Could get a bit messy.
I think we might end up with that situation. I mean, most people have multiple credit cards, I don't personally, but I think most people have tons of cards lying in their pocket. So I think it's inevitable probably that we're going to have a multitude of apps on our phones.
And
the most popular ones will be the ones that that win out at the end of the day, and you probably end up finding there are two or three that people just have to have on their phones if they want to pay at the point of sale using their mobile.
Yeah, definitely.
So the fifth one, which we haven't spoken about today, is Gust Pay, and I don't think we really qualify to talk about that because we haven't played with it yet, but that's a solution out of Stellenbosch, if I'm not mistaken. That's the other one, and I think they've actually been around the longest, but I'm afraid we haven't had a chance to play with their solution yet, and I'm not sure it's actually been rolled out all that widely at the moment. I certainly haven't seen it at any point of sales here in Johannesburg.
What would also be interesting to see is from these guys that are rolling out to various merchants, from retailers to restaurants to coffee shop, to actually see where the best uptake's going to be. I think that's going to be interesting to see whose strategy worked out the best.
Yeah.
But I guess that's something we'll also be going through over the next month. Indeed.
Well, this is quite fun, actually. It's just flowed out of a conversation we had this morning, talking about what we're going to talk about in the show, and talking about all these new mobile payment apps, and a conversation actually with Nafisa Akabor, who used to work here at Tech Central. We've decided the both of us. In fact, Rechot's going to do the column, but I'm going to provide some inputs as well. We're going to see to what extent we can actually go cashless. So actually ditch the need to carry money around in our wallets and pay with electronic means, mobile payments, cards. It doesn't matter what format we use, but we're going to do our best not to use cash for anything for a month. I can see obvious areas where this is going to fall down. For example, if you want to give a 5 rand coin to a car guard, for example, you can't pay him with an electronic means, not yet anyway.
Not yet.
It'd be great if he had a smartphone with geo payments on it that you could just flip some cash across to him, but that's not here yet. The car guard doesn't have a smartphone, not yet anyway. It probably doesn't have a bank account either. So that's an obvious one. Perhaps paying for parking can be a challenge. Although, you can pay by credit card at some parking, at the airport, for example. But I think most of them don't support that at this stage. So anyway, we're going to try and see how far we can get with this. And Rechot, you're going to write a column on it in a month's time
It's going to be an interesting exercise. I think, ditching cash, you don't think it's a big thing. I mean, I don't have cash on me all the time. But I think you're going to feel it once you're actually in the position where now you need to fork out some money or some low amount of money, because that's where
the low value transactions. And I'm in a habit, I don't know why. Maybe it's just I don't know why I am, but when I go and make a purchase of less than 100 rand, I usually just pay cash. If I'm buying a newspaper or I'm... I think sometimes I feel a bit guilty about using my credit card, particularly at buying a newspaper at the garage or at my local supermarket, because the merchant is paying a transaction fee for the purchase of that, and the newspaper is such a low value item, there's probably not much margin on it anyway. So when you haul out a card just to pay for a newspaper, that merchant's probably losing money on that transaction. I don't know.
But
using a debit card, the merchant isn't paying for the transaction.
Mm.
The bank or the customer is paying for that transaction. I'm with F&B. I don't pay for card swipes. So I know you do with some banks, like Absa, for example, which is one of the main reasons I moved away from. That has challenges as well. You bank with Nedbank, right?
Yes.
Do they charge you for debit card transactions, or is that included?
As far as I know, I've got a set fee that I pay every month.
Okay.
So I'm not sure if that's fall under. It's obviously included. I don't think it's free by any means.
But you don't pay per transaction.
No.
I think that's a trick that only Absa has engaged in. we're going to try that out. And if you guys have some feedback on that, have you largely given up cash, let us know. You can send us an email at info@techcentral.co.za and let us know how you get along and how you deal with small payments, paying for your parking, for example. Do you still keep a wad of cash in the car for those sort of purposes?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, and I look forward to the exercise. But I think mobile payments are certainly going to, or mobile apps are certainly going to make it a lot easier for those small denomination payments.
Absolutely. I'm certainly looking forward to using some of these mobile devices like MasterPass and SnapScan and others. When I see them at a point of sale, I'll use them. And as I mentioned, I think in last week's podcast, I was out at a trail run recently, the Spurgatting Winter Trail Series, and one of the vendors under a tent at the race was accepting SnapScan.
Yeah, that's cool. I think it also allows a lot of merchants, especially in the flea market type environment. That would be handy too, because how often do you get to any of these things and you don't have money, and they all accept money only? They don't have credit card machines.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. Well, I, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, there's been a lot of politics again this week, unfortunately. A lot of watching of Parliament, and I spent a lot of the time. Actually, by the way, Parliament has got an excellent YouTube channel now. It's not necessary to fly all the way down to Cape Town or hope that the parliamentary sessions are being broadcast on DSTV's parliamentary channel anymore. You can be pretty sure that if there's something happening in Parliament, it's being broadcast on YouTube. So that's pretty cool. So anyway, I was keeping an eye on YouTube this week and the budget votes that are happening in Parliament this week. And I particularly was interested in the one on the Department of Telecoms and Postal Services. And the new minister there, Siyabonga Gcwele, has announced some plans, some of them looking a bit far-fetched, I must say. For example, on digital TV, saying that he's confident that we're going to meet the June 2015 deadline to switch off analog television. That's simply not going to happen. He's dreaming if he thinks that that's the case, and his advisors are informing him very poorly if they've told him that. It's just too late in the process now to get this done by the mid-2015. The best we can hope for is urgency at this stage. But interesting developments going on. New Government Gazette published this week, which provided more clarity in the split in the Department of Communications. We're seeing that the there's been a whole shake-up in reporting, what entities report to whom. Broadband InfraCo, for example, it's now been confirmed will report into the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services and not the Department of Public Enterprises as it did before. And that should have happened years ago. It's about time that change happened. I'm still not convinced that Broadband InfraCo actually has a raison d'etre. I think that they should simply be, their assets should be stripped and sold to the highest bidder and closed down. I don't think the company has a reason for existence. But it's now reporting into the Department of Telecoms, which is an improvement. We've seen some bizarre things as well, though. ICASA, there was a lot of discussion about whether it should go to telecoms and postal services. It's eventually gone to communications. I'm not sure that's the right move, given that ICASA... I think the only logical way of dealing with this now is to split ICASA into two and go back to the old days of a broadcasting regulator in the form of the IBA and a telecoms regulator in the form of SATRA. But that kind of goes against the whole convergence idea, which the country's been punting, and countries around the world have been punting for the last decade and a half. So it would seem to be a retrograde step, but it would seem to me that that's the only way of really dealing with the split in departments. So perhaps that's what government is planning to do next, is to create the IBA, which would be a constitutionally independent regulatory body, which is required under the Constitution. The broadcasting regulator has to be independent of the executive arm of government. It doesn't say any such thing about the telecoms regulator. So the telecoms regulator doesn't... I think that may be the long-term intention here, because I can't see it actually working any other way. You can't have ICASA reporting to two separate ministers.
It's going to be messy.
It's just going to lead to conflicts of interest, and it's going to lead to all sorts of problems, I suspect. But we'll get clarity on this as the months go on. But the one that's really strange and struck me this week was that CETA, the state IT agency, which is really the operational delivery arm of government, currently sits under the Department of Public Service and Administration, which would seem to be the logical area for it to sit because it supplies IT services to government departments, is being moved to telecoms and postal services. Which has never historically been an operational department. It's been a policy-setting department. And here you're bringing this operational entity, putting it into a policy department. It just doesn't make sense. I don't know why they're putting it there, because this thing provides services to the public service. It's put it under public service administration. Why move it to telecoms, which sets policy for the telecom sector? It doesn't seem to make sense to me. I'm not sure it's been properly thought out.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like there's no internal communication within the government departments that are actually trying to work out this.
Either there's a lack of communication, or the president is being terribly advised on a lot of these issues. Perhaps it's a bit of both. Anyway, enough of the politics. let's move on to our usual features. Our winner and loser of the week. I've picked the winner this week. In fact, I've picked the winner and the loser. So let me just dive into them. Maybe you want to pick up a bit on this winner as well. I don't know if you've ever played the game, but
yes.
Good. My pick this week is actually an American company called Dovetail Games. And I'm picking them purely because I'm a huge fan of Microsoft Flight Simulator, which Microsoft completely stuffed up over the last few years. They discontinued development of Flight Simulator, and then they released this absolutely appalling software called Microsoft Flight, which was nothing like Flight Simulator. It was an attempt at a Flight Simulator, dumbed down Flight Simulator.
I think it was for a broader consumer market, potentially.
And it failed, hopelessly, not surprisingly. It was a terrible game. It was badly thought out. It was never going to appeal to the hardcore Flight Simulator enthusiasts, and so they've killed that project. But thankfully now Dovetail Games has come along and reached an agreement with Microsoft whereby they're going to license Flight Simulator, and they're going to continue the development of the game with releasing I think Flight Simulator 10 on Steam, and promising a new version of Flight Simulator next year.
That's going to be exciting.
And yeah. I'm a huge fan of the franchise, so I'm really glad that it's back on track, and let's hope Dovetail Games can bring out a really excellent version, because the Flight Sim 10, which is the most current one, is many years old now is really starting to feel dated in terms of the latest computer technology and what it can do.
Now the question is, do you still have a joystick?
I don't. I always played with the keyboard.
Oh, you're a keyboard player. No, yeah. I had to have a joystick.
I knew every single key, how to deploy the flaps, how to put down the landing gear, how to do everything on the keyboard. Nice. And it was great fun. There was something kind of relaxing and soothing about getting in a Boeing 747 at OR Tambo International and taking it off and landing it in Durban 50 minutes later, and having the conversation with the air traffic controllers and, if you put the hard realistic settings on, it's quite hard to get it right.
I don't think I've managed many successful landings in my life.
I think the first time I tried to take off with that the Boeing 747, I went for the realistic option. So the plane wasn't waiting for me on the runway; it was parked, and I had to taxi it out, listen to the air traffic controller telling me where to go, get it onto the runway, issue all the instructions. It's incredibly realistic game. And then take off and get to the right altitudes and deploy the flaps at the right time, get the landing gear up and down.
And it was complete. You had to manage every part of that aircraft, which was great.
Absolutely, yeah. There was obviously the easier settings as well, where you could just take off and fly around and look at the graphics and look at the landscape. But yeah, excellent.
I was never really an expert, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, it was great. My loser this week is because I'm a customer there, so maybe it's a little unfair to pick on them, but I'm going to anyway, and that's Vodacom. Because I've been a customer of the company for over 20 years now, and they still, despite making promises, are unable to cap me as a contract customer if I go out of bundle. And when I go out of bundle, they charge me a ridiculous amount. I think it's a rand a megabyte. I was on a 2 rand package before, 2 rand a megabyte out of bundle rate. Now it's a rand, I think, which is still insane. But the fact is that I had a conversation with the call center operator today, and he said that they can't... they can't cap that data amount. If I go out of bundle, they will then cap me on everything. So voice, SMS, and data, which makes my device completely unusable. Mm. I just wanted a solution to be able to cap my data usage when it's up, so that I can dial *111#, which is the USSD code to access Vodacom services, and top up. So I'm not paying this exorbitant out-of-bundle rate. But no, they can't do that. Which I think is ridiculous, because this is a modern telecoms operator. It's the biggest telecoms operator in the country, mobile operator anyway, and it's got advanced computer systems. They must be able to do this, and I can only imagine that the reason that they are not allowing they don't offer the option for their customers to cap based on the service category like data, voice, and SMS, is that they profiteer from the people going out of bundle and not realizing either that they're out of bundle or people realizing too late that they're out of bundle because they haven't been notified in time sort of thing. So I'm quite annoyed about it. So just on that basis, and sorry Vodacom, I am a customer, so it's probably a bit unfair because I don't know what the other operators do. They may very well do the same thing. But for that, Vodacom is my loser of the week.
Yeah, no, I agree, because let's be honest, the technology certainly doesn't prevent us from doing that kind of thing. I mean, it must be possible in today's day and age to be able to cap a customer. I actually use on my MTN account. Yeah. I haven't had that problem because I haven't gone out of my. I've got a 2 gig cap data built in for my that I use for my second SIM. For my primary SIM, I actually use Afrihost's data offering,
okay.
And they're very good because firstly, you obviously have full control over everything that you're doing and spend because you see it within the app or on the website. But when you run out, you stop.
But you have to be an MTN customer to use that, don't you?
Yeah. Mm. But I mean, that just shows that the technology is there to be able to cap a customer when he goes out of bundle. So it shouldn't be an impossible thing for them to do, and I would hope to see that they do it.
Great. Excellent. Let's do our Apple products picks of the week. Rafat, what have you got this week?
So my app, or I'm going to call it a game, it's available on Steam. And the reason why I picked it was many, many, many years ago when I first started out in computers, I was addicted to a game called Tim, The Incredible Machine. And what this allowed you to do was you basically had a lot of gadgets and things within the game that you could layout anywhere on the screen.
I've played a different version of this. It was made by Sierra.
That's the one I'm talking about. Oh, okay. Tim. Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. So this
is
this
a great game.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, you could everything that you put on, you could put out, you could lay out construction essentially. Put out balls, put out fans, put out electrical sockets, and if you put all these things together, you could build incredible machines that just basically react to anything that you do. I remember the funniest one was you can actually let a cat walk around and that the you can let a mouse out of a cage and then the cat would chase it and that could trigger something else and to start a light bulb. Really a lot of fun playing with that game simply because, you know, you could let your imagination run wild. So there's a new version of this game, or the developers that did the original one actually bring out a new version called Contraption Maker. It's available on Steam for $14.99.
Which platform was that? Windows.
Yeah, Windows.
Windows.
Okay. It's a great game. I mean, I've really been, you know, throw back to the time when you were just sitting in front of the computer building Rube Goldberg machines. It's certainly fun. It'll keep you busy for a while.
I think I actually still have the original Sierra game on disc somewhere. I must see if I can find it. I think it was for DOS, so it may not run anymore on Windows, but it may be in compatibility mode of some kind.
There is a free version you can download now, so I think they did make it open source or free at least. It's still the same old version, so you would be limited in what you can do.
Yeah.
But this new one's got a lot more stuff to play with. Mm. And if you were a fan of the old game, Tim, I would certainly suggest check it out. It's on Steam, so you can just Google it, or you can go to store.steampower.com and search for Contraption Maker.
Excellent. Great. Well, my pick of the week is something that may actually have been around in the South African market for a while, but I know it used not to be. You used to have to use all sorts of trickery to get access to it, like we currently do with things like Netflix. But it's now available to South Africans, and that's the online ebook service Audible. It's absolutely brilliant. It's owned by Amazon now, and it's available in South Africa. And I think it's $15 a month. You get an audiobook or credit a month, which gives you access to just about all the books in their portfolio. And it's fantastic. I find so little time to read fiction these days, or even nonfiction. And it's fantastic to be able to listen in the car on my phone. They've got a fantastic app. And in fact, if you're listening on your phone and you come into your house, you switch on your TV, you can fire up the Audible app on your TV or on your computer. It'll just pick up where you left off. And they've got a great selection of books. It's not exhaustive yet, but it's a very reasonable selection of books. There's some great titles in there. Most of the popular, you know, bestseller books are there, and a great selection of nonfiction as well. And I think at $15 a month, it's a heck of a lot cheaper than buying audiobooks on CD from your local retailer. The choice is obviously a lot greater as well. So my pick of the week, I don't know how long it's been available in South Africa. It may be a recent development, it may not. I'm not sure. Maybe one of our listeners can tell us. There's my pick of the week, Audible.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I actually used to play with that before it came to South Africa in the Amazon store in the US.
Oh, yes.
I thought there was a massive selection of books. At least everything that I wanted to read was there. But what stood out for me was the narration of their books, usually by famous actors or, you know, people with incredible voices. Even some of the authors actually read their own books.
Yeah.
And that really adds to the emotion that you get when you listen to the story.
Yeah. Well, I've actually just downloaded a bit of schlock. I downloaded a Stephen King novel called Dr. Sleep, which is a follow-up to an 80s novel called The Shining. And it's the narrator there is excellent. Range of voices and really draws you into the story very quickly.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Excellent, Richard. I think that's all the time we have for this week. As always, if you've got any feedback on the show, if you want to tell us about your cashless ventures, email us at info@techcentral.co.za. Until next time, from Richard and myself, Duncan, have a good one.
Ciao, ciao.